Hello, sacred beings, and welcome to another episode of Sacred Sister Podcast. I'm your host, Britt Lynn, and this is a personal episode. It's actually part two to the episode on feeling through dark times and becoming a nourishing space holder. So within part two, this is becoming a nourishing space holder. And in today's episode, I'll be sharing with you seven helpful pieces of insight so that we can show up as space holders to our friends and family who are going through hard times in a safe and nourishing way. I notice this so much within the spiritual community, and even as space holders or facilitators in the spiritual community, that there is a very interesting dynamic with and relationship to more dense, lower vibrations. What I notice is that there is a energy that percolates in a space that dense energies are to be moved out of, are to be avoided, are to be cleared, are to be healed, are to be moved through, are to be this, that, and the other thing, in a way that says we need to get out of here. We need to, like, this isn't okay. It makes dense, low energies and vibrations not okay to exist in the space. Do you notice that? Even on social media, yes, it's lovely to talk about movement. It's lovely to talk about healing. In the long run, this is something that all of us want to be moving toward, most of us. But there is also an overwhelming narrative of that. Very seldom do I see peace and true space holding for things like grief or shame or sadness or the shadows that exist within all of us, anger, upset, judgment, competition, right? All these shadow energies that we talk about moving and healing all the time, but especially with something like sadness that accompanies grief and sorrow and loss, we want to be especially mindful of the relationship and of the narrative that we hold with aspects of the human experience like this that are unavoidable for all of us at some point, if we're really showing up to our lives, will encounter grief, will encounter sadness. It is a normal human emotion, a healthful one to really assess and feel through. And I cannot tell you the amount of times that I have been vulnerable to express my own sadness about losing both of my parents and my dog, that I've been met with someone slapping a Band-Aid over my sadness, and how much that makes me feel erased, how much that makes me feel unseen, ashamed, unsafe in the space. So that's the intention, that's the inspiration for this episode. I envision a future timeline for the collective that we are able to show up and hold one another as immaculate space holders. And that is the reason that I'm making this episode today, because we need to be able to feel safe in order to assess our emotions. And when we go to our friends and open up about our deep emotions and they slap a Band-Aid on us or do any number of things that I'm going to talk about here in today's episode, it makes us feel wrong for feeling those things. And there's nothing more debilitating to our healing process than feeling ashamed for the way that we feel about something. It's not helpful. And it's a huge shadow. And I want to assess that shadow today. So starting off this episode, it's normal to be sad. It's normal to experience sadness. It's really, really good to allow yourself to feel into sadness and grief and loss, because it really allows us to witness from a unique vantage point just how much we care, just how much we're able to feel towards something, right? It's like, how many of us have exciting things happen in our lives and we feel so overjoyed and happy that we go out and celebrate? Or someone else experiences something super exciting and we want to go out and celebrate them. We make a whole occasion out of it. People get engaged, we go have a dinner over it. We have a party, we have a celebration. We create entire engagements to attend in order to celebrate. And a lot of times the same cannot be said about sadness. Yes, we have memorials, we have, and specifically, obviously, today I'm talking about like deeper things to be sad about. But honestly, I'm referring to anything on a spectrum of sadness. If you're feeling sad about literally everything and anything, it's valid. So just know that just because I'm presenting this piece that's very alive in my own life does not mean that the thing that you're sad about in any way needs to hold a candle to or be compared to the immense like loss and grief that I'm discussing today in losing both of my parents. So I hope this makes sense. Let's dive in. You know, just recently I was interviewed for the On Death podcast, which if you remember in season 4, we sat and interviewed Tom Kubik. And On Death is the podcast that Tom hosts. So On Death is basically deepening dialogue with people on death, dying, and loss. It's a really, really beautiful podcast. They're immaculate space holders, Matthew and Tom, and it was a pleasure to sit with them. Now, at the end of our interview, Tom asked me, what types of things make you feel safe from a friend? What do you want from a friend? Are there certain things you want to be asked from a friend? And really, I allowed myself to sit with this question, and the only thing that was really surfacing on my heart was like, just be curious. As a friend, just be curious. Your friend is in pain. You see them in sadness and in sorrow. This is a really beautiful place to see what your relationship is like with your own ego, because if you see someone experiencing sadness and you go into the experience thinking that it's your job to make it better or that you need to fix them or that you want to perk them up or that, you know, any other that are very well-intended ways of changing where they are, that's a really good thing to be aware of. And yes, I understand that this goes against most societal norms that we hold in regard to how we approach sadness. We've been taught that we want to be happy, and yes, we want to be happy, but that doesn't mean that we need to constantly intervene on the things that other people go through. That we can't equally hold space for the more uncomfortable emotions and allow ourselves to like get wet with them, get wet with the person. Does that make sense? So if sadness is water, if sadness is the emotion that's coming up, rather than standing on the shoreline and trying to reel them back in and being like, hey, get out of the water, you're getting all wet, why are you doing that? There's nothing to be in the water about. Why are you doing that when you could be dry? Here, I'll give you a towel. Here's a rope. Here's a boat. Here's something to float on. Let me just scoop you up. Even though your friend might be like, you know what though? I'm swimming and I really like it. It's been a long time since I took a swim. It's been a long time since I've let myself be held in the water. It's been a long time since I've allowed the water to float me on the surface. Or it's even been a long time since taking a deep dive. You know, do we inject ourselves into a situation from a space that says, it's my job to make sure this person gets out of the water? Or do you show up to a space really as a friend that says like, hey, how are you? I see you're in the water. How's it going? How are you? Is there anything you need in this moment? Can I support you? How would you feel best supported? How can I be there for you? This is the type of energy that I so deeply want to be surrounded by when I'm sad, which is exactly why I'm making this episode today. I envision that future timeline where we're all immaculate space holders and where we're all able to just show up from a really open-hearted, compassionate, curious place that is less concerned with how to rescue or fix or change our friend, and instead is more concerned and coming from a space that says, how can I be there for them? How can I make them feel held and seen and nourished in this moment? And sometimes there will be things for you to do, and other times there won't be anything for you to do. You know, a lot of times I will edit out the space in between my pauses, and I'm gonna try to really be more mindful of that. Because I think these spaces and these beats, these moments to really just like let words land and to slow down is so healthful and nourishing. I want to be really intentional that I'm not energetically rushing past any aspects of this process within assessing sadness. So let's dive into the 7 pieces of insight that can help us become more nourishing space holders, shall we? 1, as I mentioned, is to get curious. You can ask if they want to share what they're grieving or who they're grieving, because keep in mind, just like I stated in 1 of this episode, you don't just grieve people. You can grieve the loss of a job, a relationship, a feeling, an opportunity, a physical item, perception. Yeah, grieving perception. Yeah. When our perception of something or someone shifts and changes, maybe like we see someone and then we see something else about them that illuminates us to a deeper aspect of who they are, we can go through a grief process about that as well. It's coming back to that really curious state of mind that is ready to ask questions more than fix what's going on, or even hold the belief that there is anything to fix, rather. 2 is just to simply sit in silence with them. And something that helps us to open this space is to verbalize, is to communicate. So even entering this arena, entering this realm with someone who's sad, and maybe you haven't spoken about being a nourishing space holder to them, opening that dialogue and letting them know, hey, I see that you're sad and I want you to know that I'm here for you, can honestly change someone's entire life if they're not used to having that space held for them. I think even just bringing the concept of space holding and being a nourishing space holder to the forefront is a very, very powerful one for us to endeavor, which is another reason why I'm creating this episode today. So creating the dialogue, letting them know that you see them, that you want to be there for them, that your intention is not to change anything that's going on, but simply that you want them to know that they're not alone in their struggle and that you want to hold space for them. And within that space, anything can happen, right? You hold no judgment, you hold no expectation, you hold no nothing for them except that spaciousness for them to express themselves or to sit in silence or to be seen or to do nothing or to spill their guts out. You know, space holding as a concept is literally just being there for someone. Number three, understand that there's no way for you to make it better. There's nothing for you to make better unless you're able to bring people back from the dead. In my case, you know, unless you're able to. No, it's not. Because I was going to say, you know, say someone is grieving the loss of a job. And then I was going to say, unless you can give them their job back. But it's like, then we're also attempting to meddle with what is. We're attempting to meddle with what is. And what we're actually doing when we attempt to meddle with what is, we are, again, coming from that egoic perspective that overrides divinity, that overrides and says to higher power, to universe, to the creator of all that is, that has allowed for this loss to happen. What we're attempting to do in that is also control and say, oh, I can bring them back from the dead. They weren't supposed to die. Oh, I'm going to give you back your job. You weren't supposed to lose it. And that is another form of control, another form of you thinking that you know better than what the higher power has allowed to unfold. And for some people, this may be going into a belief system series or set that you don't ascribe to or that you don't resonate with. Maybe you don't believe in higher power necessarily, or you don't believe that everything has some sort of unfolding, some mysterious reason for happening that perhaps we don't see yet. And I don't even know where I align with that myself, to be honest. Yeah, I don't like to get too set in what I believe or what I don't believe, to be honest. I think that some things do just happen by chance. And things also happen in a mysterious set of unfolding that is purposed for a specific reason. So that's number three. Understand that there's no way for you to make it better. Number four is meet them where they're at, which is a deeper piece of understanding that there's no way to make it better. So it's taking the steps down the staircase to meet them at the bottom instead of trying to call them back up to your level, which in a way can be that band-aid piece. Saying, hey, where you're at's not okay. Why don't you come back up here? It's better. It's better up here. So meet them where they're at. And an even deeper piece of this is number five. So it's enacting our empathy. Sink into the sadness with them. Allow yourself to go there, to consider what it is that they're going through. And one of the ways that you can enact that empathy inside of yourself, we spoke on this on the On Death podcast as well. You know, a lot of people will say things like, I can't even imagine what you're going through. I can't imagine what that must be like. And to that, my response almost always wants to be, well, do you want to? Do you want to try sinking into it? Do you want to try imagining it? Because you can. You can put yourself in that state that enacts radical empathy in a way that says, wow. For example, my case, she lost both of her parents. And then taking yourself and injecting yourself into that mind frame that says, what must that be like? What can I imagine that that would be like to me? And then, of course, in that perspective, then we also usher in all these different dynamics within the space holdership that we are able to consider, which is, well, it can trigger some of your own wounds if we try to empathize with someone's situation. And I'll describe that a little more deeply right now. So for example, we always want to, or if you have the bandwidth to, as I feel is one of my superpowers in terms of empathy, we want to also contextualize and attempt to adapt to the context that they are holding, the sad person. So for example, what this looks like for me is I am grieving the loss of my two parents, and our family dynamic was close, and my parents were married for 35 years, and we had a rock solid born again Christian foundation that our family stood upon, and my parents were deeply, deeply in love, and they were my best friends. So taking that context and putting it in a bubble, and then also looking at your own context. For example, I might be talking to a friend who didn't have both of their parents together, who might have unhealed wounds in their dynamics with their mom, their dad, or both of them. They may have experienced trauma with their parents. So do you understand? It's like each of us has our own stories with everything. So having the mutability, right? Mutability, being able to be flexible, to be mutable, to mute certain aspects of ourselves so that we can adapt to something else that's presenting itself. That's how I think of mutability. And Gemini is a mutable air sign, which means Gemini is really, really good at turning on and off certain levers and levels of themselves so that they can adapt to what's around them or what's needed or required or beneficial for the space. And me having Sun, Mercury, Venus, and Jupiter all in Gemini means that there are a lot of aspects of myself that are very able to be super changeable like that very easily. So it is a piece of my life mission, my soul's purpose, to come here and dialogue on mutability and how it is that we can be better space holders for each other by contextualizing and understanding the concept of context and how important context is in every and any situation. If we have the mental capacity and bandwidth to visualize such things, because I understand that this is complex. What I'm attempting to do is verbalize nuance, which is a very new realm in communication, I feel like. There's not, at least I don't see anybody doing this out there because it's a complex topic to talk about. So if you're with me right now, fuck yes, you are my hero. I love you so much. If you're interested in learning how to contextualize and separate your own context, what's happened in your life, in order to be able to adapt to somebody else's, even if it's just for a moment for you to like feel into, I believe at least this is what makes us more nourishing space holders. So, allowing yourself to contemplate what it must be like with their set of context is huge. The other day when I was featured on that podcast, I said, okay, so let's take a minute or 2 minutes to sink into what that might be like for you. Instead of keeping yourself so separate from someone and their tragedy, their sadness, lean in, as Brené Brown says. When you feel an aversion to someone and you almost feel so separate away from them, lean in. Lean into the discomfort. See how much more deep you can go with them. So in this way, it would be conceptualizing the type of dynamic that I have with my family and applying it to your consciousness and then sinking down into that space, really letting yourself contemplate. And I invite you to do it now. I'll put on a little bit of my binaural beat in the background. This is a hang drum, solar plexus chakra healing binaural beat. And I really invite you to let yourself sink down. If you are in a mental state that you feel that you can handle this, contemplate. Mom has cancer. Mom considers going to treatment. Internally, you feel like it could be a death sentence, that maybe her body isn't strong enough to intake the transplant. Mom goes in to treatment, decides that this is an act of God, the opportunity to have this done. Goes into treatment, receives the transplant. Body is not intaking it. You begin to witness your mother deteriorating cognitively. My mom gained 70 pounds in 2 weeks. And died. And then my dad gets a motorcycle and is happy and is struggling and is turning to alcohol more and more. And there's nothing you can do about that. And then he's on his way to his friend's house, and some old man isn't looking and goes to make a turn, and my dad plows into him, and they catch fire and burn and die. You know, it's through becoming a nourishing space holder that I believe that more compassion organically, naturally, innately begins spouting out of us. Because when we can hold space for our own selves to endeavor darkness and to assess that which is moving, that which is alive within us, we provide opportunity for our inner circle and those we wish to share our reality with. We provide them opportunity to show up as space holders for us. And by showing up as a nourishing space holder, you witness complexity within someone else's story, which then nourishes and feeds your own complexity with your own story, and so on and so forth, from being to being to being. You know, I inquire and I ask you right now, who's in your inner circle that you hold these relationships with? Think of those people right now and even say their names out loud. For me, it's my husband, Curtis, my sister, Charity, my sacred sister, Hannah, co-host of this podcast. My best friend, Jessica. Other sacred sisters, Julia, Kim, Genevieve, Jordan, Riley, my husband Curtis's mom. When we allow ourselves, do you see how this is? It's almost like the center of the flower of life, the center of a geometric form, the center of a geometric pattern. When we allow ourselves to turn inward and assess the universe that is within us, we are this whole seed. And then when other people come and we allow ourselves to be accessed, we share our beautiful geometric pattern with another, blending patterns. And then in that coming together, both of our energies are amplified. Both of our vibrancies are awakened. Both of our compassion is turned on. Both of our connection to one another is there. It's present. This is the healing nature of reality. And it stems from the deepest, darkest places. Number 6. Is do not offer unsolicited advice or higher perspective. This is another big piece of inspiration for this episode because, as I mentioned earlier, I cannot tell you how many times I have opened up vulnerably to someone in order for them to turn to me and respond with, I am here to tell you that your mom and dad are always with you in every moment. When people tell me, we need to shift your vibration, we need to bring your vibration to a higher level. When they tell me, oh, well, isn't your mom going to be your baby incarnated anyway? These moments are like so removed from the reality that we are in that moment. Because when we're in embodied sadness, we are in our lower chakras. We are having a human experience. We are involving our senses in our expression. Experiencing and expressing emotion. We are integrated with the most human aspects of ourselves. And when those types of unsolicited advice and higher perspective are offered, those are perceived concepts that people are putting onto us, right? Projecting onto us. Projections have been another concept that are really circulating a lot more. And projections are not necessarily bad so much as they are just sharing our perception of whatever it is that is being projected. So as a compassionate example in this, perhaps when someone offers that unsolicited advice or higher perspective, you may be gaining insight into how they would handle that situation, what their mindscape looks like in association to that type of circumstance coming up within them. Which may be, let's think of it from a higher perspective. You know, all of us have different reasons for handling emotions the way that we do, and they look varied from time to time, moment to moment, day to day. And it's just another piece of awareness that we're able to have in our tool belt that honors and respects the fact that all of us deal with things differently. Again, I come back to the mutability piece. Are you able to, even though you would handle a situation in a completely different way, are you able to show up for the fact that someone else may want to handle their own emotional assessment in a different way? Can you become available to that? In the higher chakra realm, that is not connected to where we're at, that is not connected to what is on the table in this moment. And in nature, even though it's well-meaning, it's selfish. It is someone offering their perspective in a moment that we are experiencing humanness. It is putting a band-aid. It is shutting us down. It is not being there in a nourishing way. It is not providing a safe space for us to just be exactly as we are in that moment. So understand, all of us, I'm sure, have shown up in a way that is somewhat unhelpful to someone. I'm sure I have done it, you know, a bajillion times, especially before my mom died. Before I really knew that type of sadness. So I just wanted to offer that visual for any of you who are able to tune into that. And number 7 is to ask them questions, ask them prompts, really prompt what that connection is about. Because as much as we can be sad about something that is not there anymore, something that we have lost in the physical form, we can also experience joy in upholding and honoring their memory. So sometimes prompting that memory and prompting whether they want to share stories or experiences that are creating like a tender moment can be really helpful as well. So ask maybe what they loved most about them or what their favorite memory is of them. It's not moving the energy or asking that they come out of the space, but it's even going deeper into what they loved about that person. And something that I have to say here is that it is in recalling those memories, recalling past experiences and the stories that I hold within my heart of both of my parents that is such a sweet reminder of their energy. And I'm able to, like, really, when I tell a story of my parents or of like a fond memory that I have of them, it's like they're right there with me because I'm allowing my own consciousness to connect with the energy of that memory, which brings me back to that past timeline. And it allows me to surface those exact same emotions, those exact same feelings, those exact same connections with them that I experienced in that moment. This is what they mean when they say that memory lives on, that memory never dies. This is how self-reflection, reflecting on our lives, can be so healing. And we can work with the practice of self-reflection so much. This is what my free challenge, Sidestepping Social, really deeply dives into: self-inquiry and self-reflection, asking yourself questions and recalling past experiences, pieces of your life that help you understand why it is that you are exactly the way that you are in this moment. So here we are. The 7 I will go through again quickly. As a space holder, number 1 is getting curious. Ask if they want to share what or who they are grieving. Number 2, sit in silence with them. Number 3, understand there's no way for you to make it better. Number 4, meet them where they're at. Number 5, empathy. Sink into the sadness with them. Number 6, do not offer unsolicited advice or higher perspective. And number 7, ask what they loved most about them, about it, or their favorite memory. I hope that this has been illuminating for you. I hope it hasn't been too confusing. I ask you, if you are here at the end of this episode, it seems that we are sacred kin, please share this outward. We are in such a time where support is so needed, where closeness is so needed, intimacy and trust is so needed. Share this to everyone and anyone who would benefit from it. I also welcome you to go into the ratings and reviews, leaving us a comment, and let us know how this spoke to you today. What illuminated your path? And how do you see that it will be of benefit for you moving forward? I love you so much. Thank you for caring. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being here, most of all. Have a beautiful rest of your day, beloved. Namaste.